Teaching Learning Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. I have found a great resource for the classroom teacher and school administrator. It's this wonderful book called The ABCs of How We Learn by Swartz, Blair, and Tsang. Today I'm talking with one of the authors, Jessica Tsang. You're going to enjoy this one. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Today I'm talking with Dr. Jessica Tsang. Jessica is a researcher and instructor at the Stanford University Graduate School of Education. She studies how to design instruction that naturally recruits students' native capacities for learning and understanding. Her interdisciplinary research bridges between cognitive neuroscience and the design of effective classroom practices. Jessica and her colleagues, Dr. Daniel Swartz and Dr. Kristen Blair, have written an excellent book for teachers and administrators called The ABCs of How We Learn, 26 Scientifically Proven Approaches, How They Work, and When to Use Them, published by W.W. Norton & Company, 2016. Jessica, thanks for joining me today, and say hi to everyone.
Hi, everyone. Glad to be here.
Well, I appreciate you spending time with me, and thank you so much for taking a little bit of time just to talk about the book. And I love the book. I love the way it's written, and I do have some excitement about the different aspects of it, so it's as goofy as that might sound. I think it's going to be a cool tool for my listeners to know a little bit more about. But before we go there, I'd like to get you to talk a little bit about what you study. In the introduction, I shared with everyone that you study how to design instruction that naturally recruits students' native capacities for learning and understanding. So can you talk about what that means?
Sure. Yeah. So all that means is that there are many ways that we can learn as people. We can learn by being rewarded. We can learn by observing each other. We can learn by seeing contrasting examples, and they each have their own special outcome. And one of the challenges in teaching people is figuring out what kinds of things you want people to learn and what methods are best for getting there. Like, if your goal is for people to change their behaviors, then reward is a good method. If your goal is to get people to remember, then retrieval practice is a good method.
Cool. So is this something that you long studies, like over 10 years of the same people figuring this out, or you work with children, or how does that work?
Well, the different methods tend to be studied by different sets of people, and so it's really in bringing them all together that you really get this view that there are different outcomes that come from each one. Bringing together the different fields through having the opportunity to write this book is what really brought this to my attention. So it was more about learning about other people's research than doing some particular thinking about my own work.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's go from there into, I also, in those words, was this phrase, cognitive neuroscience, what it is and its impact on understanding teaching and learning. What's cognitive neuroscience?
So cognitive neuroscience is the study of thinking in the brain. For example, we know that thinking about numbers engages a part of your brain called the parietal cortex, which is sort of on the side, the upper side of your brain. And for instance, we know that when people have a lot of anxiety about math, they engage emotion areas of the brain during math problems. And concurrently, the areas of the brain that normally do math actually decrease their activation when you're feeling the math anxiety. So cognitive neuroscience and what I'm interested in is understanding what's going on in the brain when we're doing cognition that's relevant for schools and learning.
So in learning the science, what made you interested in it? What kind of brought you to it, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, you know, I was sort of became interested in cognitive neuroscience when I was about 18. I just thought, frankly, that it was cool. So I started learning about that as an undergrad and came to study education in graduate school and thought, let me just see if I can put those things together. So there's a field called educational neuroscience that is sort of just being formed right now that's trying to bring together cognitive neuroscience and education in productive ways. So I sort of dove into that, did a project that I like to think takes findings from cognitive neuroscience and turns them into classroom instruction, and felt really happy doing that type of work. I've actually moved away from that since then, but it's still an active area of study for many other people.
Okay, so what would you say is your main area now?
Oh, so now I would categorize myself in something called the learning sciences, which is the study of how learning works and how to design learning experiences sort of bundled together at the same time.
Nice. Okay, excellent. Let's shift into the ABCs of how we learn. Who's the ideal audience for your book?
This book is really for anyone interested in learning. So parents, camp counselors, older students, college instructors who need a textbook. We really try to include a broad range of examples in the book that many different people can relate to. And because the book is really focused on why learning techniques work and how they work rather than focusing on application in a specific field, we hope that people from many walks of life can find relevance and creative uses for their own goals.
Excellent. Now I got to get into this because there's three authors. So how do you make three work in putting a book together? And how did it work out with this book?
So that was a fun and challenging part of writing this book. So the three of us, we've worked together for many years and we've written articles together and done research together, but this is the first time we've written a book together.
Okay.
So basically the way it fell out is that we each selected a set of letters for which we were the primary owner. After each chapter was written, our lead author, Dan Schwartz, edited each one to make sure the tone was consistent across the book, because it turns out we're three different people and we write three different ways. So he took it upon himself to really streamline how the book reads. And it took a few chapters, I think, to really sync up with each other, but we got better and better as we wrote more. And fortunately, we didn't do the letters in any particular order, so hopefully you can't tell which ones came first and which ones came last.
Oh, that's funny. Now I'm going to have to reread it and go through and go, all right, which, yeah, because it's neat because it does not have the feel of different writers. It does not feel like there's not a, that was about to be a really bad sentence. there's not the feel that there's like a herky jerky sort of motion to it or something like this. It does have a smooth transition between the chapters. It feels like one person wrote it.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that. And we have worked together for maybe almost a decade, more than a decade in some cases. So we know each other pretty well.
That's awesome. That's very cool though. Cause I do, you know, it was funny when I was reading it, I'm like three. So I wonder, cause I've met with some people who've done books together and a lot of times they'll say, well, you know, I did this part and they did this part and they did that part. And you actually can tell. But this one you can't. So that's cool though. And it's good that you get along because you're still working together. So that means that obviously it didn't ruin. it's not like, the breakup of the Beatles or something like this.
There were some tense moments, but we turned out better in the end, as they say.
Nice.
No, I love my co-authors. They're wonderful people.
Excellent. One of the things that I love about the book is its layout. You follow the alphabet and you identify strategies. By the way, I'm kind of laughing there because I was like a little kid when I got the book and I'm like, okay, I really want to see if you did the ABCs or not, because my alphabet has 26 letters and you did 26 letters. So it's, we got the alphabet there. So it was like, yes. All right. So one of the things that you do is you have the techniques and approaches to learning. Each chapter has a brief explanation, how it works, how to use, an explanation of the outcomes, a section on, can people learn to teach themselves and the risks associated with the approach. And my favorite part is the good and the bad that comes in. I really like that. And can you explain the thinking behind the layout?
So for the letter organization of the book, the ABCs was really just chosen based on a class that sort of evolved to have this structure. And the class ended up covering about six or seven of the letters. And so taking on this book, we decided to go full bore and do the entire alphabet. So we had fun picking topics to slot into each letter, and we had to rearrange some things. I think S started as scaffolding, but then we wanted to put it as S as self-explanation. We wanted to fit sleep in, but we already had an S, so that turned into Z. And you can see it was a little bit of a dance to get all the letters in together along with all the topics that we wanted to cover. The ABC order, of course, doesn't really help anything. It would probably be more useful, I think, to organize them by the outcome topic, but it provided a lot of coverage for us, and we sort of fell in love with the idea.
Well,
so.
And it's awesome. It works well, because just like you said, yes, you could reorganize them, but that misses out on the whole Sesame Street thing here. We got the ABCs, and so and it works very well. And that's interesting what you're saying. So no friendship ending arguments happened over I got to have S. My S is going to be this, right?
There was none of that. We actually had a lot of fun being creative with the letters and the topics and rearranging things.
Well,
so
I see that creativity with the X word.
Yes. That one was my idea, I would say.
Very nice. Very nice. I like that one, because that was one of those that I looked. I'm like, okay, we got a J, we got a Z. Do we have an X? We got an X. They made it work. I like that. It's very cool. So talk about the layout of the chapters themselves, because then we have some commonalities that happen between them, so that you get, there is this common format through each chapter, through each letter.
The way the chapters are organized was pretty intentional. We wanted the book to be both knowledgeable and practical, and sort of maximally useful for people in everybody's individual goals in their teaching and learning. So we really included the why of each mechanic, and that's in the how it works section, in hopes of providing people with foundational knowledge to allow them to be able to adapt the mechanics to their own needs. How to use it section gets people thinking about application in different spaces, and outcomes is really important, because we're hoping it emphasizes that learning is not just one thing. There are many different types of learning to be had, and the risks and good and bad examples are in there to. We're hoping they help people get a sense of the variation and space of possibilities for the mechanics. And in terms of practical use, we also included at the end of the book something called a problem-solving index, which sorts the chapters by the problems you might observe students having, like students not seeing the relevance of what they're learning, students forgetting too much, students feeling out of place. Lists these problems that might come up and suggest chapters you might want to read to get more ideas.
Very nice. What I like so much about the book is that it is very user friendly, and this is, I like to find books like this as a resource for classroom teachers and building administrators, because being able to cross reference that way, being able to find easily what you're kind of looking for or what your thought process is just a much needed type of tool. Because if it's going to be used as a tool, which the ABCs of How We Learn can definitely be used as, it has to have that type of layout, because it has to be something that I can pick it up and go, okay, what's going to help me find what I'm looking for? And so kudos to you all for doing that, is my point.
Oh, thank you. I hope it ends up being useful.
I think it will very much. So tell me, before we leave this part of our discussion, I got to ask you, do you have a favorite letter?
Oh, that is a good question. I guess I like two of the chapters. I like Z, because I just find it really interesting. Z is about sleep, and there's a lot of research on sleep out there, and I think people will be surprised and interested in what the research has turned up. And it's really important for learning, by the way. I say my other favorite chapter is chapter J. That's the chapter on just-in-time telling. And that's the idea that when you give a lecture, just when the students are ready to learn the material, they learn it more deeply. And the chapter talks about techniques to use to prepare students to learn the lesson at hand. I don't mean just telling them to pay attention, but rather you can try engaging them in a problem up front that gets them thinking about the lines of reasoning that your lecture will cover. Like if you're going to teach students about standard deviation and statistics, you can first have them try to think of ways to describe the consistency of a set of math scores in their class, sort of getting them to think about the ideas relevant to standard deviation and pondering how those ideas combine or can be improved upon, and then giving them the lecture that tells them about formal standard deviation right when they're curious about it.
Excellent. You had the J. That's what's cool. Got the just-in-time telling. That's nice. When you look at those chapters, one of the things I said earlier is that one of my favorite aspects of the book is that in many of the chapters, there is an explanation of the good and the bad. And I like this because it's, I think sometimes where a book leaves off or stops short of, it stops short of, okay, let's talk a little bit about what you might do wrong here or how this might be introduced not exactly the way it should be, or there are better ways of doing it. And there's actually examples of that that you guys give. Talk a little bit about that good and the bad. I mean, did that come from a discussion or experience, I guess is my point.
Let's see. Well, one of the things that we always talk about in our research group is how understanding something is really about understanding the variation of it, where not only one example of what concept it is, but where the borders of where that example or where that concept lies. And so having the negative instance of, okay, this is not it, will really help you to understand what it really is. So I think it was sort of based on that. But in more practical terms, there are a lot of ways that you can just misuse some of the things that we're writing about. And we wanted to make sure that people were aware and didn't make those mistakes. Like, for example, it might be a really good idea to use rewards in your classroom, like a point system or coins to help motivate students to do things. But it turns out that if you try to motivate students in that way to do something they're already interested in doing, you can actually end up decreasing their interest for that activity. So we wanted people to be aware that to look for that case when they might actually be decreasing children's interest when they really wanted to be increasing it.
I like that. That's a great explanation of it too, because like it's just like one of my favorite chapters is F, and it's feedback, and it's something that it's so important, the quality of feedback that kids get, and under that section, examples of good and bad use, it starts off, the delivery of effective feedback often depends on a good guess about what students had in mind when they made the error. And I think that's so important, because I think adults immediately jump to a conclusion about, well, it's just wrong, and instead of thinking maybe they're going down the wrong path. Well, and then the section gets into bad feedback and good examples of the feedback, and so it's and that happens throughout several of the chapters like that. And I just that's another one of those that just awesome, because there's examples that allow the reader to say, oh, this is what it might look like then, or should look like.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad you appreciated the feedback example there.
That's one of my and by the way, that was the first letter I started with, because that's one of the things I'm like, all right, let's see what F is. If it's feedback, I'm yes, it's feedback. Okay, all right, I know that's dorky, but that's one of kind of my areas.
We were very proud of our of the acronym we came up with for the feedback chapter, STUN-R. As a way to give effective feedback. I think a STUNR stands for specific, timely, understandable, non-threatening, and revision. All very relevant, important ideas, and we were just very proud of ourselves for coming up with the acronym that put them all together.
Very nice, very nice. And kudos for that, too, because you're looking at somebody who, if it can be like three letters, I might be able to make it happen. Well, cool. So tell me why should, from your perspective, from the authors, from all three of you thinking about this book, why should a teacher or school administrator read the ABCs? Because I know, like I heard you say a little bit ago, you talked about how it kind of stemmed from a class that you guys were teaching. And I know I read a little bit about it online where, because I was trying to figure out some of the ideas where it came from, because I love the book, and I was just wondering about it, and I saw where you guys were using it in class or the concepts of it in a class and so forth. It's kind of, well, I'm starting to go babble off on another question here. Let me just, you know, why should a school teacher or a school administrator want to use it?
So what I'm hoping is really useful is that I think the book has a lot of ideas in it that people can use in creative ways. I'm hoping that's what people find really useful. So based on the book, maybe somebody will decide to beef up the conceptual understanding in one of their lectures by adding a good analogy, or maybe they'll decide to change the way, change the feedback students get on their midterm. Speaking of feedback, there are a lot of ways to insert the mechanics into existing instruction to improve it in a small way, or to try to put the mechanics together into an entirely new design. I think another thing that people will find useful is our emphasis on how techniques can backfire. And I think that this will really help people to, well, I'm hoping it will really help people to understand how they can use the techniques effectively for their own purposes.
Well, that's awesome, because that any of those types of comments, and once again, I got to get back to my original comment, which is this is what makes it so user-friendly. It's, I mean, it's because you're thinking along the lines of what somebody, if I read this section, so what? Well, here's the so what, and now here's the thought about this is the why and how, and now here's some things that you need to watch out for. Here's some examples, and you know, and some of the chapters actually have a section called risks, the risk of taking it, which I also think that's a pretty cool. It's kind of like you're thinking like I just said, you know, someone reads it, well, what's the so what of this? Well, here's the so what, and this is what you got to watch out for. Here's the, you know, I just love that, awesome stuff. You know, when with a book like this, are you using it in class now? Is it, and are you students at Stanford using it?
We use it to teach the class that that it was based on, and then this class is mostly for mostly master's students take it, who are in a 1-year program that they then leave and go join. Many of them go into positions where they're then designing learning experiences. And so we're hoping that they sort of take this knowledge and bring it out into the wild, and come back to us and tell us what they ended up doing and what they found useful, how they applied their learning.
Oh, excellent. With that being said, if someone wanted to know more or contact you, Jessica, is there a way that they could get in contact with you? Are you out there on social media or anything?
Sure. You can. People can visit our lab website, which is at aaalab.stanford.edu. And on there, you should be able to find contact information for the three authors and also get a sense of other research that we do in our group.
Excellent. Because I'll be putting those links in the show notes, and so that way they could reach out to them, as well as links to purchase the ABCs of How We Learn. And is there anything that, before we get into closing out, is there anything that you'd like to share about the book that we haven't gotten into?
I think really what I'm interested in is how people end up using the techniques on their own. We don't know everything about education, and we really wanted to be able to give tools to people that they can use and think about in their own space. And so one thing I would like is to get feedback from people on how they ended up using the book. Unfortunately, we don't have anything set up to do that yet. So we'll have to think about that for the near future.
Very cool. For all you guys listening out there, if you get this book, you got to send Jessica some feedback. So how you use the book. All right. And by the way, feedback is letter F in the book. So you can see some good examples of that. Well, before we say goodbye, I've got a couple questions I'd like to ask you that have nothing to do with the ABCs of How We Learn. Here's my first question. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
Oh, you know, the thing that really comes to mind is the topic we've been talking about throughout the discussion, which is feedback. I feel like it's so often overlooked, not just in giving it to students and having students have an opportunity to revise themselves, but seeking it for yourself. In you know, making yourself the master teacher that you want to be. I think that, if anything, is advice that I hope they would take away from maybe reading the book.
Nice, nice. I think we can always get better at giving it and taking it feedback as we do our as we work with kids and as we do our work. Cool. So my last question is this. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
I think that would have to be Mrs. Nancy Stewart, who is my high school journalism teacher. She taught me many things, very practical ones, like the difference between the words less and fewer. But she also really believed in teenagers, and she let us make mistakes and try new things and have ownership. And for me, I think that having the opportunity to drive something and feel ownership over a product during school gave me a sense that I could really do things for myself. So to Mrs. Stewart, thank you so much. You are awesome. That's what I would tell her.
Excellent. I love that. That is too cool. And teachers making a difference in people's lives, which is really neat. Jessica, thank you so much for sharing with us the ABCs of how we learn. I love its layout. It's easy to understand and use, and the information is so helpful for the classroom teacher. I wish you and your colleagues the very best. Take care.
Thanks, Steve.
We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes.
Hey, did you know that we're now available on Google Play Music? That's right. You can now find Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 on Google Play Music. Check us out.